Nina Fouché brings us this story from the mental health ward of the Menlo Park Veterans Hospital.
Each Wednesday afternoon, I volunteer at the Veterans Hospital with United Students for Veterans Health. The ward I visit bears the construction paper artwork of children who still don't know what war is. The artwork, like the flower arrangements on the dining room tables, comes from people who will never visit. I follow the hospital rules, using hand sanitizer and remembering that compromised immune systems means never touching the surfaces of things. One of the most important rules is not expecting to be remembered. Nearly everyone in the ward has some form of memory loss. Inside the hospital, there were usually a few people parked in front of the TV, below a sign in the common room that read, "Turn the TV off during mealtime." The first time I met Eleanor, the only female veteran in the ward, I asked her if she wanted to talk, and she pointed to Heather Locklear on the TV and hissed, "Shh, she's telling me important things." When I could pull her away from the screen, I wheeled her to the dining area and tried to ask questions about her life. When I talked to her, she'd lean conspiratorially across the table, her pink mesh headband just inches from my face. She often responded to my questions by buzzing her lips and vigorously nodding her head. Though she believed she was meeting me for the first time each week, she seemed animated, almost chummy. Sometimes, Eleanor didn't speak at all. Those days, we would sit across from each other and carry on a kind of conversation with just our eyebrows and shoulders. Sometimes I read her Walt Whitman and Treasure Island. Eleanor, listening wide-eyed, would vigorously shush anyone walking by, as though she was the lone congregant at a worship service. I remember trying to get the voice right for Long John Silver. "I'm capping here by election. I'm capping here because I'm the best man by a long sea mile." I think he was her favorite character. When I read John Silver's parts, she seemed to take on his role, putting her elbows on the table and waggling her finger to address her shipmates. One afternoon, I noticed her folding dinner napkins. I decided to teach her to make a paper boat. It was mesmerizing to watch her, knowing the likelihood that, at each crease, she would not remember those that had preceded it. She approached the process with wonder. She was watching her hands as if they were children, doing delightful, unexpected things. I asked my friend Pat to play piano at the Veterans Hospital because his playing makes me forget where I am. I wanted Pat's music to take the veterans out of the ward. He tried to temper my enthusiasm with a shrug, saying, "I'll do a little Sinatra. The old people like that." He came to the ward the next week with hands in his pockets. He didn't make eye contact with anyone as he walked in. When he sat down at the piano, I turned off the TV. He began to play. From the moment his hands touched the first key, Eleanor rolled her shoulders, buzzed her lips, air pianoed and snapped. When the nurse gave Eleanor her pills, she closed her hands over them and shook her fists like maracas. Watching Eleanor, I felt a buzzing in my limbs, an inability to swallow. For those songs, I think I joined her in the feeling of being lost within time. I could let Eleanor exist for a moment, in the room and in the songs. The music stripped away the condescension and separation implied in the visitor-patient distinction. I felt that I was just a person in a room full of people. The room swelled, and I felt all of us inside it. Me, Eleanor, Pat, Mr. Ballesteros, who stayed sane by humming Hawaiian lullabies, the nurses, the techs, and all the silent, broken members of the ward. The ones whose blood and dreams whirred to the tune of the machines that communed with their veins. All of us. At the end, Pat stood up and shook each person's hands. Eleanor told me he was a good boy, but her eyes said he was a god, and I believed her. People become what they invoke. cat left and Eleanor kept buzzing and clapping like there was some music left that she'd breathed in and still had to cough out. The other volunteers and I played repeat after me rhythm games and held our breath, not wanting the music in Eleanor to fade. We wanted to pretend that Eleanor would remember Pat's playing, but quickly her hands went still, and she looked up at us with the intake of breath and the clumsy indignation that marks when her mind resets. She glanced back over at the TV, her North Star. Dinner would be served soon. We left. Pat can bring anyone to tears when he plays, but he resists sentimentality. So in the parking lot, where many good scenes end, he looked at his sneakers and told me not to exaggerate when I explained that this was the highlight of Eleanor's whole year, of mine. He played Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I smiled to the point of tears as I watched Eleanor go to the place Dorothy described. But Eleanor will not remember Pat or me. I don't know what significance playing for her holds, when her memory of the music proves ephemeral as the flush in her cheeks when she listens. What does it mean to visit someone who doesn't remember? I like to think that Pat's music captured all of us equally. Pat's playing was the first experience I had shared with Eleanor that made time feel irrelevant. I want to believe that shared experience without shared memory can be enough. In the meantime, I play Sinatra just to see Eleanor dancing.
That story was written by Nina Fouché and produced by me, Sophia Polisi.